The Super Mario Bros. Movie had all the makings of a colossal failure. A cash grab only meant to sell tickets, toys, and other merchandise. And sure, this movie does all of that and then some. But by no means is this a bad movie. In fact, the Super Mario Bros. Movie might just be a great movie. Hit. Hello again, my most excellent of friends. How is the wasteland treating you all? Despite all our hardships and the challenges that we face, we are all still here. And the sun still shines and life is still good. And may that never change. For the second time in pretty much the same year, a studio, a group of people has managed to do something that up to this point has been unheard of, and that is to make a faithful adaptation of an existing IP with no real changes to the story and no social commentary. And even in that aspect, this movie might be the first to pull it off. We've been making adaptations for decades now, and up to this point, it's been tolerable to let studios simply do with these stories whatever their hearts desire. As a result, we've seen a plethora of terrible adaptations on the big screen in the last couple of years. We could talk about that all day. Instead, I just want to mention three. The three biggest letdowns of the last 20 years. One, World War Z, Cowboy Bebop, Resident Evil. And if you're asking yourself which Resident Evil, I don't know, pick one. They all kind of fit the bill. Now, is it fair for me to call these particular movies, these franchises, the biggest letdowns? Probably not, but I'm going to, just the same. Keep in mind that all these movies, franchises, what have you, they all deserve their own episodes in order to fully get into the nature of why they so badly missed their mark. When it comes to comparing them to their original source material, well, you have to do a deep dive, but that will have to be for another day. Also, what does any of this have to do with the Super Mario Bros. Movie? There's a lot of details to consider, but in short, the three aforementioned franchises are simply not faithful adaptations. So how do we define that? What is a faithful adaptation? Well, everyone has their own criteria. And the showrunners, writers, directors might even make the case that what they produce, what they delivered, that was a faithful adaptation. And, well, I guess everyone's entitled to their own opinions. This is my criteria, and it's super simple. It's about the look, it's the characters, and the overall feel, the atmosphere. And if the movie, if the series doesn't nail all three, then you get kind of a mixed bag. And if they mess up one of these, then it's a bad adaptation. And I'm guessing you already know the one I mean. It's characters. Just in case you didn't know, it's characters. So real quick, let's take a look at the three aforementioned titles, starting with World War Z. World War Z, as a book, was this vast collection of stories that take place all over the world and give us a look at how these different people, different nationalities, cultures, and social standing, how they handled the Great Panic, the fall of society, and mankind's eventual victory over the living dead. It is a triumph of storytelling, done in the laziest way possible, with very little character development done. Somehow, some way, it just works. I would say it's very much up there when it comes to what makes a great zombie story. Because even if you remove the zombies from the story, it's still full of intrigue, drama, corruption, and panic. All of it happening as the result of a pandemic and how humans behave when their lives are on the line. I could go all day as to the reasons why, but if you have read the book, then you already know what I'm talking about. And if you haven't read the book, just seen the movie, you've done yourself a disservice. It's an easy book to read. It's split up into sections, so you can read it little by little. And it's haunting to see how much of it has played out in real life due to the pandemic we just went through. The movie, unfortunately, doesn't do any of this. It focuses on one man running away with his family, trying to get out of the zombie infestation that's taking place in New York. And then this one guy goes on a mission to find out where it came from and to try to find a cure or something. Instead of focusing on stories from different people, it's one guy. It's Brad Pitt and his fake family. And the actual interesting events, like taking back the cities, reestablishing society again, we just get told these things happen. We're not shown, and to put it lightly, it's a shame. World War Z, the movie, fails in all three. It misses the look, the characters, and the overall feel of the story. Instead, we just get generic zombie movie starring Brad Pitt. Let's just tag his name on it, because people will watch if they think it's like the book. Let's not dwell too much on that. It's just going to upset me. So let's talk about something that will upset me. Cowboy Bebop, the live action, has similar issues. There's a lot I can say about that show, but I'll spare you all at the moment. Instead, where that show nails the overall look of the story and the feel, the atmosphere is just not there, and the characters are butchered. All in an attempt to cater to modern audiences, whatever that means. Cowboy Bebop the anime is a highly stylized story of four individuals who all find themselves on one ship, together for the briefest of moments, and the adventures and experiences that they go through together change their lives forever. There's no way I can properly describe what it is in so little words, but there it is. Also, there's bounty hunting and space travel because it takes place in the future. I could probably write volumes about the subject, and I hope to in the future. If you've seen it, again, then you know what I mean. And you can also understand just how tall of an order it really was for them to try to recapture what made that show so great. The most maddening thing is, they could have done it. It wasn't impossible, but they simply chose not to. At some point, my complete review on the subject will be out on this podcast. Stay tuned for that. That might be a long episode, but you see where I'm going with this? Resident Evil, any of them, also suffers from the same, probably. They mostly nail the look, but again, the characters and the atmosphere. How is it that we can't figure that out? I asked myself that for years. Every time a poor adaptation was released, and we all just had to bear with it. And the answer finally came, and it's simple. They just haven't cared in the past to do so. If it's good enough, it's good enough. And that's it. And we all know how satisfactory that answer is. Okay, I'm not doing Resident Evil, the movies, the justice it deserves. Those movies have never featured one of the actual characters from the main story as the protagonist. Instead, they just rewrote them to fit a singular protagonist because, well, you know why. And the feel? Those games weren't actions, at least not at first. So the movies should have instead focused on suspense. They should have been thrillers. Movies that put you in the shoes of a desperate survivor left with limited supplies, simply trying to survive the horror. It doesn't sound easy. And translating the experience from an interactive one to a passive one is not seamless. But tell me it can't be done. That used to be the excuse. Not anymore. Not since The Last of Us. So, what does any of this have to do with the Super Mario Bros. Movie?
Simple.
The Last of Us proved that it can be done. That attention to detail was key. And nothing can be left to chance. It's not about the movie or the TV series being good enough. It has to hit its mark, and it has to fit the three criteria we just talked about, and more. I wish I knew the details. Who pitched the idea to do it? To make a Mario? Someone had to. In fact, someone had to convince Nintendo to do it. In the past, Nintendo tried it. They leased out the name, the characters, and a Super Mario Bros. Movie was made. And well, the rest is history. There's another movie we could talk about for hours. When it's one of the worst box office bombs to be ever put to film, there's a lot to be said. But for the sake of time, this massive ridicule put Nintendo off from making movies, and I thought that we'd never live to see the day when another one was made, and like I said before, with good reason. Oddly enough, I didn't think it was a bad movie when I saw it the first time. I mean, I know it was, but it's not the worst movie I've ever seen. It's just not a Super Mario Bros. Movie. It never was. A lot of bad adaptations have been made since, and a lot more will continue to be made. But every once in a while, it looks like we'll get a good one. And I'm very happy to say that this one is one of the good ones. So, what does it take to come up with a good adaptation? Let's find out. As far as the plots of most Super Mario games go, they're not overly complicated. For the longest time, it's been about Mario saving the princess from the clutches of Koopa. Later on, he got the name of Bowser, but first it was just Koopa. Of course, the game series has strayed from the storyline as the games have gone on. I couldn't even begin to tell you who was the villain in Super Mario Bros. 2, and there's a bunch of other obscure titles that have featured other villains. The sports games feature Bowser as a playable character, and Super Mario Bros. 3 even made that meta joke of the whole thing being introduced that it was a play, it's not real, so they're characters acting out. That's pretty cool. This movie features the titular Super Mario Bros. As real people, living out their dreams in Brooklyn, having quit their jobs in order to work for themselves. It's not going too great, and the pressure that their family puts on them to succeed is starting to get to Mario a little bit. It's here where their lives take a wild turn, as a series of events eventually transport the two into the Mushroom Kingdom, where they meet Princess Peach and help her save her home and her subjects from the evil Bowser. And yeah, I mean, that's kind of it. There's no reason to add anything else to this award-winning formula. In terms of plot, that's, like I said, that's it. That's the whole story. These games aren't known for their intricate story details and elaborate themes. Instead, they are products of their time, focusing on gameplay, unique graphics, and replayability. However, as game graphics got better and better, there came the need to give these characters a little life. For the longest time, they were silent protagonists who only spoke through text boxes. And in the case of Mario, he just doesn't speak at all. A decision that many game developers made with immersion in mind. With voice acting in video games becoming the norm, we got to hear them speak for the first time, and that was kind of cool too. By now, you've probably seen the movie and got your own opinions of it. there's a few observations that I want to talk about. Details that I loved and decisions that seem questionable, at least in my eyes. So let's just talk about these moments. Right from the get-go, there's homages, Easter eggs, callbacks to everything underneath the sun when it comes to the game series. From the original themes to all characters that have cameos, it is absolutely jam-packed, and I'm so glad that they decided to embrace this route. To tell you the truth, I went into this with zero expectations. I simply sat down to see what they had come up with. And when Luigi's cell phone went off, it brought such a smile to my face. A smile that never went away as the movie went on. I was still smiling to this day. Okay, another one. Our brothers are from the real world, and then they make their way to the Mushroom Kingdom, which is in another dimension, I guess. The story elements and concepts like this are pretty common nowadays. They're so common that there's even names for tropes like this. I find it hilarious that they used the exact same concept that was used in the original 1993 movie. The same thing happens in that one too. Two brothers are also from the real world, and they also end up fighting for the future of the Mushroom Kingdom. I'm kinda glad that that's where the similarities end. So, I wonder who made that call. If it was a story element that the studio pushed for, or the official explanation that Nintendo made the studio use? I'm gonna be asking that question a lot. Who made that call? Okay, another one. When Mario gets to the Mushroom Kingdom, he almost immediately runs into Toad, who after hearing his plight tells him that his best shot is to go find Princess Peach, who he says can do anything. And you better believe we're gonna talk about that later. The reason I bring it up now is because this whole movie also adds the whole together we can achieve anything theme. And I kinda like that, because it gives Mario and Luigi a lot more depth than they've gotten in the past. I like how they didn't try to really explain the power-ups. Anyone who's played the game knows what they are. And for those who don't, the explanations that they gave were really concise, super easy to follow. Having seen the movie a few times now, I love the fact that we got scenes where it was just Mario and Peach talking. Never in my wildest dreams did I ever think we would ever get that. These scenes were done so well. Their friendship really develops organically throughout the movie. There's no forced romance or awkward moments between the two of them that seem out of place. Another thing, Peach is a bad liar. That didn't really need to be there, but I'm kind of glad that it was. She was just trying to cheer him up. It was a nice little moment. Here's something that I haven't talked about, but I'm going to mention it now. I should probably talk more about it, but I think the visuals speak for themselves. They had top billing throughout the entire movie. There's a lot of color. There's a lot of flair. And we see all the effort that went into making sure this movie looked fantastic. It's one of those movies where you could grab a screenshot from any point in the movie and boom, there's a wallpaper. Like I said, it's fantastic. The shots of them on the mountains, the flower bed, the Kong Kingdom, the Rainbow Road. It's so pleasing to the eye. Bowser, being voiced by Jack Black, I'm pretty sure that he did more than just read the lines that were given to him. That decision to have him play the piano, the bravado, the one-liners, that had to be all him. And the movie's all better because of it. Okay, I gotta say this one because I'm still laughing about this line right here. The princesses find him attractive. They do if they have good taste. I think that's one of the funniest lines I've ever heard between Jack Black and Charlie Day. And again, who decided to cast those guys? They don't get enough screen time together. That's kind of a shame. You wanna hear something really funny? It took me this long to realize that the whole sequence between Donkey Kong and Mario is just a giant reference to Smash Bros. That's just a testament to how cohesive the story progression was. In order to achieve this objective, you gotta do this. I feel like in other movies, that would be kind of weak storytelling, but since this movie is based off a video game, that kind of logic is to be expected. I've seen the movie like 3 or 4 times now. Just kind of came why. So yeah, I'm not that clever. I've never claimed to be. The Rainbow Road sequence was really cool. It's a nice segue into the third act. And Donkey Kong and Toad messing with Mario and Peach while they talk was, again, it's a nice little moment in the movie that probably didn't really need that. And the fact that there's a bunch of little moments like that in the whole movie, it makes the movie stand out. It gives it real heart. Okay, another little thing. The drift to get the speed boost that Mario does? Come on, man. That's some real attention to detail there. Remember that whole thing I said about moments where the movie makes you laugh out loud because it just impresses you when you thought it couldn't? Dude, that was me the whole time with so many different scenes. And that's what I'm talking about. Just going above what's required. Peach standing tall against Bowser's arrival was a good shot. I'm pretty sure that was lifted straight out of the concept art. Nothing wrong with that. Another little detail, didn't have to be in the movie, but it was, I'm kind of glad that it was, is when Mario fights Bowser in the real world. In the real world. I can't recall ever seeing Mario with bruises like that in video games. That was a little jarring, but real welcome. Spinning Bowser at the end in order to defeat him. That whole fight sequence was such a delight. To see them actually go to that. Actually implement the move from the video games into the movie. It was such a cherry on top moment that I'm pretty sure I cheered at the movie theaters the first time I saw it. And then finally, the credit sequence. That was really good. I love the music choices, the feel, and then the after credit scenes. That was nice too. Most of the time I try not to use too many of my notes. I tried to limit most of my observations to 10 or maybe even 5 sometimes. But as you can see, that simply wasn't possible this time around. It was just too many little moments that I wanted to highlight, to call out, and to ensure that you caught all of these. And make no mistake, I was in no way all of my notes. I refrained from using all of them. Just the most notable ones, otherwise we'd be here all day. Now let's move to the most important part of the story. And that's character development, right? No matter how simple a story is, there has to be character development, character growth. Without it, there's no journey. And to see a character learn nothing is discouraging. It's also important to see them make mistakes, to see them learn, to see them win, to see them fail. It establishes an emotional connection with an audience, and the payoff to their journey feels more satisfying as a result. The Super Mario Bros. Movie is not a thematic masterpiece, with layers and layers of story and depth that can be analyzed, interpreted, and discussed. And it doesn't have to be. I said at the beginning that the games have always been light on the story. And the movie is the same way. We have internal and external conflicts that get brought up and are resolved as the movie goes along. I didn't say it when I was talking about my favorite parts of the movie, but spoilers inbound, because yeah, there's gonna be spoilers. I probably should have said that at the beginning. Let's talk about Mario. And what can we say about him? He's the most recognizable video game character in the world. There's no one else like him. Even if you've never picked up a controller, if you never played a single video game in your life, you know Mario. He's that lovable plumber who always saves the day, Mr. Nintendo himself. And yet the tall task this movie has to accomplish is giving him a character arc that's believable. But we sort of get that with him. It's kind of a mixed bag. Mario's a dream. So much so that, like I've said before, he quits his job and he starts his own company with the hopes of making something for himself. Now let's just say that it doesn't start too well. They haven't gotten too many calls and the pressure's definitely starting to show. It comes to head at dinner time where, despite his mother's approval of their efforts, their father chastises them both for quitting their jobs and chasing a dream. The rest of their family doesn't help at all, as they all see them as a major joke. And sure, the commercial they made was a little cartoony. But Mario defends his decisions, and he states that they need a trademark, a hook, that it's gonna work out. From the get-go, before he even makes it to the Mushroom Kingdom, we can see that Mario's determined. He's brave. Once he sets his mind on something, he's gonna accomplish it. Still, his father's words do get to him for a moment. The simple truth is that Mario wants to accomplish what most men want in their lives. That's to make their fathers proud. This is part of the reason why the two bros end up in the Mushroom Kingdom. Having to track down Luigi now, he marches straight ahead to see Princess Peach, demands to come along so he can find his brother. The training sequence is nice, it's comical, and has all the makings of a new school Mario game. And even though he doesn't manage to clear, you get a really nice moment between him and Peach, but more on this later. When Mario has to face Donkey Kong, he's at an extreme disadvantage. But despite pain and difficulty, he continues to get up and fight, until he eventually gets the upper hand and defeats him. This really impresses the princess. She compliments his spirit and is very pleased with the result. Because of Mario, there is hope. And this is something that he never saw as a good quality. But she reassures him, it's a very good thing. The Rainbow Road sequence is another nice little moment between Princess Peach and Mario. They get to talk, even if they're interrupted. And like I said before, it's these nice little moments where we really get to know the two of them. We see that Mario's a smooth talker. That's not something we've ever really seen in the games, but it's a welcome addition, just to say. Mario and Donkey Kong don't exactly get along. Two alpha males, both the centers of attention. I like this take. We see that the two of them are a lot alike, but they put their differences aside so they can escape the eel, get to the Mushroom Kingdom, and well, you know the end to this. Mario saves the day, he saves Brooklyn, gets the approval of his father. It's a simple arc, and it's resolved. One of my favorite scenes is when he's fighting Bowser at the end, and it takes him just a moment to get up, and he contemplates not getting back, just staying down. And you can see all the other characters in the background trying to hold on, and then the whole scene just comes to a stop. Stares at that broken TV, the commercial, the shot of him of Luigi and him in the capes, and he gets up again. I remember asking my little sister if we were seeing Mario in that state, and she simply said no, and I agree with her. There's never been reason to animate bruises and injuries on Mario. I think it's significant that they did this here. It really resonates with the audience. Mario is in pain. He's hurt. And despite all of this, he's still gonna give it another go. And it's a wonderful lesson to teach children. Not the it's okay to fight, to use violence, not that aspect. But the whole stand up for what you believe in and don't give up when the going gets hard. It really says something that these are the aspect of Mario's personality that they chose to highlight here. And I choose to believe, it may be true, it may be false. I choose to believe that this was a direct mandate from Nintendo themselves. This is how we want the whole world to view Mario, as someone who stands up for what he believes, even if other people don't support him. Someone who takes care of those he deems important to him. Someone that does the right thing. Speaking of those he cares for, Luigi's Mario's youngest brother. Just like his brother, he's one of the most famous video game characters in the world. He's the original player too. In the original games, he was simply portrayed as a copy of Mario, just Mario Green. And well, glad that didn't last. By the second game, the one that was a Japan-only exclusive, his abilities and his appearance had made him a very different person from his brother. In those first years, Mario was always the star, but Luigi would get his time in the sun soon enough. I can't recall at the top of my head when it is they decided to make Luigi a scaredy cat, but it's fit him ever since, and the movie follows suit. Like I said before, Mario and Luigi quit their jobs, They go into business for themselves. And because they don't have success right away, the family places the blame on Mario since he's the older brother. But you can tell that this isn't the case. Mario didn't strong-arm Luigi. Luigi chose to follow Mario. He believes in him. He admires him. Wants to be like him. But hopefully, he wants to be his own man. Despite their family's lack of faith for the two of them, Luigi is not discouraged. He even tells Mario the same. I really like that. And naturally, when Mario decides to jump in and assist the city in stopping the flood effect in Brooklyn, Luigi, despite his reservations, goes along with it. Even if it's only because Mario's dragging him along. The brothers split up, and Luigi ends up in the Darklands. And you can't really blame Luigi for being scared. That's a pretty scary environment. Luigi being scared of everything is his whole character arc in this movie. And Mario even tells him as such, can't be scared of everything. Well, it seems like such a throwaway line at the beginning of the movie. It's great that he gets his own challenges to overcome. Bowser questions Luigi as to who Mario is, and he does stand his ground, if only for a moment. Sure, it kind of breaks down after a while, but you can see just the smallest of sparks. And I love how this builds up. Luigi spends the rest of the movie locked up with the other penguins and the Luma. I think it's a Luma. I never played Mario Galaxy. I do own that. I think I should play it at some point. Anyway, Luigi's a spectator for the first part of the final fight between Mario, Donkey Kong, Peach, and Bowser. And he even goes as far as hiding in a trash bin when they make it back to the real world. World. I'm probably just gonna leave that in, I'm tired. When he sees the efforts Pain, his brother's going to do to stand up to Bowser, he decides to take action. And the following sequence is such a delight. I can't really do it justice. You saw it, so you know what I'm talking about. Is Luigi brave now? Who knows? But we know he can be. And I hope they do something to enrich this newfound courage he displays at the end of the movie. Maybe a theme for the next? I wouldn't mind. So let's talk about a character that did need saving this time around. Sorta. Peach is the appointed princess of the Mushroom Kingdom. Just like the brothers, she's been a staple of the series since the beginning. She appears at the end of most of the original games, with the exception of the second one, where she's a playable character with her own unique abilities. Something the game series didn't really do again until what, Mario Kart? Can't really be sure. Peach was the character you had to rescue. A dainty, proper young lady who found herself in the clutches of Bowser. Later on, she became a popular playable character in the series and is beloved all around. We don't really get to know much about her other than the fact that she just showed up in the Mushroom Kingdom when she was very young and she was raised by the Toads, eventually named the Princess. So I guess that kind of answers that question. I always wondered if she's a princess, where's the queen, where's the king? Good job, movie, for kind of answering this question. She also appears to be the only human currently residing in the Mushroom. Her characterization is very different in the movie, but again, we can talk about that later. She's warned by her council of toads that Bowser has retrieved the superstar and is making their way to the Mushroom Kingdom. Also, whoever's supplying this information to both these factions, that person definitely deserves a raise. I would love to see that if it was the same person or group of people. Happy to say that. Princess Peach immediately declares that she will stop Bowser with the help of the Kongs and their army. While apprehensive about Mario's sudden arrival, I do like the fact that she's proficient in martial arts. She has a ton of questions for Mario. She agrees to take him with her. Peach is a woman of action. She displays no fear. She's determined to protect the people who raised her, who she sees as a family. She's very agile, skilled, brave. She marches on and does not shy away from her goals. With Mario's help, she's able to convince the Kongs, and they do make their way back to the kingdom, or in Toad. After the events of Rainbow Road, she has the city evacuated. She stands alone against Bowser, her courage in display. Despite standing tall, Bowser does get the better of her, and she has to agree to marry him. She holds her own against Bowser during the wedding ceremony long enough for Mario and Donkey Kong to show up, and she fights alongside Mario, Luigi, and Donkey Kong in the final sequence. Peach doesn't have the character development that Mario or Luigi have, but there's so much about her that we don't learn, so there's room for improvement. Could we get some backstory on where she's from in the next movie? Maybe that movie's about that? Maybe the brothers go to another galaxy? The movie certainly hinted at that. I like that she's not perfect. She accepts the help of other people, and I think that's a great lesson to teach kids as well. You can be good at lots of things, but it's okay to accept help from other people. It also makes her feel like a real person. I do want to talk about one final thing when it comes to Princess Peach, but it can wait for a bit. I think this is the final character I'm going to talk about. Bowser, I don't remember what other characters I talked about, but besides the ones I already mentioned, but Bowser has been the series antagonist since the very beginning. Not counting Donkey Kong, who's the bad guy in the first Jumpman games. Anyway, Bowser always kidnaps Princess Peach, and Bowser always loses. We get to see the full range of his power right at the beginning of the movie, and his portrayal by Jack Black just steals the whole movie. Bowser's entire reasons for his conquest are to recover the superstar, impress Princess Peach, and marry her, because he loves her. I like how I wrote that this is a kid's movie, so it doesn't all have to be here, but this motivation isn't new. In fact, it's pretty much the plot to Super Mario Sunshine, sorta. Bowser is threatened by Mario's sudden appearance, and his forces spy on the duo as they make their way to the cons. Bowser rules with fear, and his power is absolute. He almost manages to accomplish his goals, but his views of Princess Peach change when she stands up to him and attacks him at the wedding. They actually almost go through with that. He fights our heroes and he loses, but he's not killed because this is a kid's movie. Instead, he's imprisoned in the castle. And Bowser's entire role in the movie is to be an antagonist. But despite this, we still get to see his motivations for attacking the penguins, attacking the Mushroom Kingdom, and trying to marry the princess. That's a lot of characterization. They didn't have to do all that, but I'm kind of glad they did. One of the coolest things we see in the movie, a detail that I haven't really seen anyone really highlight, is the fact that Bowser actually fights Donkey Kong, a character that's not in the original Mario game series. Instead, he's at the start of his own game series. So let's just talk a little bit about that. Donkey Kong. See? I was forgetting Donkey Kong. Donkey Kong, or DK, is the original antagonist in the Jumpman games, like I've said before. Those were games that were made for arcades before Mario became Mario, and the rest, well, the rest is history. He went on to start his own series of games with the Donkey Kong Country games for the Super Nintendo. Those games were pretty good. They were some of the most memorable ones in the whole series. DK is introduced halfway through the movie, so his role is reduced. We see him get introduced when Cranky Kong tells Mario that he has to defeat his son in order to acquire the services of his Kong army. And, well, let's just not beat around the bush. DK beats the lights out of Mario, but Mario doesn't give in, and he does get the better of him. Something that no doubt must have embarrassed Donkey Kong greatly, as he's very hostile towards Mario for the rest of the movie. This just lasts until the two of them put aside their differences and they carry out the final assault against Bowser in order to retrieve the Kongs, Peach, and Luigi. Just like Mario, Donkey Kong just wants to impress his father, wants to make him proud. And when Mario and Donkey Kong find themselves trapped in the stomach of the giant eel, which I love that detail, DK tells Mario that his father thinks he's a joke, When Mario sympathizes with him, Donkey Kong immediately takes the opportunity to mock him, completely subverting the moment the two were supposed to have here. This was pretty funny, and completely in line with the character they gave DK here. Could he have become a more complex character if they decided to continue his storyline? Anything's possible, I guess, but I wouldn't hold my breath. DK proves to be a formidable ally, helping Mario and Peach take down Bowser in the real world. Proving that despite his disagreements with Mario, he's still willing to honor his father's agreement to Peach to assist them in defeating Bowser. Something that could have been an issue, but perhaps for the sake of time, it wasn't. It's entirely possible that I read way too much into it, and Donkey Kong just wanted to join the fight, take down Bowser himself. So the big question, the one that I always ask, is did I like it? Yeah. You could probably just end the podcast right here. Now, there's nothing else to say. Movie was great. You should watch it. The end. But in all seriousness, this movie was a love letter to its fans, an appreciation for all the love they have received over the years. There have been Mario games aplenty over the last couple of years, and some of them have been more popular than others. But I can't for the life of me think of a single bad Mario game. A game that missed the mark, that had the fans scratching their heads, wondering what happened with why. The same can't be said of other game series, as there's almost always hits and misses, but not with Mario. I think the question that most of us are asking is, what about the non-gamers? How do they take in such a movie when they have no point of reference? When all the Easter eggs and musical cues don't mean anything to them? Honestly, the movie was made so well that this isn't an issue. It's coherent, it's funny, it's heartwarming. It gets its message across with ease. It's not a perfect movie, but there's no such thing. When I walked out of the theaters for the first time, there was really only two things that seemed out of place for me. The original music score is fantastic, incorporating elements from all the games in such a cohesive way. Like I said before, like I'll say now, it brought a smile to my face every time I caught the start of a classic tune. It's as much an audio delight as it is a visual treat. So this is me nitpicking at this point. The song choices for some of the sequences were just odd. Not bad, but they just seem out of place. And the movie takes place in Brooklyn, so we need something that has Brooklyn in it. It's not bad, but it's a bit much on the nose. And I'm sure we could have come up with a track from the original score to play there, and it would have hit harder than No Sleep Till Brooklyn. I have the same issue with I Need a Hero. It just seems like, yeah, we have the rights, might as well. And as a result, it's out of place. Also, I'll have to say this, Shrek 2 used that song so well that I can't think of anything else whenever I hear that song. And while I really like Take On Me, again, it feels like it was a studio decision, not a Nintendo decision. I could be wrong. It could totally be a Nintendo decision. Just throw some popular songs in there. Most cases, this doesn't really bother me at all. But Phil Tech thought, was it just me? Did I miss the memo? I don't know. You tell me. My other issue is the problem that a lot of people had with this movie. And it has to do with Princess Peach directly. As I said, her characterization is totally different. She's not the proper prim young lady she's been portrayed as in most other games. Her attitude and personality, they're different. I saw a lot of people mention the fact that the studio originally wanted to give her a larger role. They wanted her to be the protagonist. They wanted her to end up saving Mario and Luigi. They wanted her to be the girl boss they see her as. And that Nintendo had to step in to stop them, ordering that the script be rewritten so that it's Mario and Luigi that save the day, and that this caused some strife among those who were working in the production. I can't speak to the truth on any of this. What people say on YouTube and the other social media platforms can't really be verified. You could kind of see that in Peach when she clears the obstacle course and she tells Mario that she got it on the first try, but I don't buy it. Her explanation's fair, She never talks down to anyone except for Bowser. She's kind of supposed to do that. Plus, there's nothing wrong with making her a little different. At the end of the day, she still needed help from Mario and Luigi. They still ended up saving the day. My gripe, my issue with all of this is not that they changed her personality. It's that they gave her Daisy's personality and what that could mean. Are they gonna make Daisy the prim and proper princess since they made Peach the tomboy? Are they even gonna go with Daisy in the sequel? Is it gonna be Rosalina? A traditional Peach would have worked just as well. But again, that's just really me nitpicking small elements of the movie. There's been many adaptations of existing media over the years, and like I said, it's been a mixed bag. From passable to downright garbage. It was believed to be impossible to make something that the fans couldn't really accept. But it was done once before, and Illumination Studio pulls it off for the second time with this movie. The look, the characters, and the overall feel all align to make a sublime experience. It made me smile from the beginning of the movie to the end. Characters all act the way they should, and you can see the love and respect for the fans that went into making this movie, with nothing wasted. Did we see all our favorite characters in this movie? No. And that's not bad, as there's plenty of content left for a few more sequels. Oh, that's so sad. In the end, the Super Mario Bros. Movie was not something I was expecting to like, let alone enjoy. I've been so cynical when it comes to movie adaptations over the years. I had to see something so refreshing, so good, so delightful. Really was a shock to my system. It's all been so bad that, like I said before, I had zero expectations that they could do it right. And I'm so glad they did. Imagine, just imagine if this movie had failed in the way Buzz Lightyear and Strange World failed over the last couple of years. Would Nintendo ever try again? Would they wait another 30 years before attempting to make another one? Its success was a message. Faithful adaptations can be done. It's not easy, but the results are more than worthwhile. This movie has made so much money, it's ridiculous. And that should be enough to get other studios to really pay attention to how they treat their IPs. Good enough was never good enough. And this kid's could be a game changer. My friends, we've reached the end of this journey, and I'm so glad that you were here, right here with us. I really hope you enjoyed yourselves, if only for a little bit. I'm sure our paths will cross once again. As always, I want to thank the whole lot of you for making such a journey with me. To take the time out of your day and to wander with me, well, it means the world. And I hope that at the very least, like I said before, you were entertained. If you want more, go ahead and listen to our previous episodes. All of our content is available for free. One day I may decide to record some premium content. Maybe then I'll charge for it, but don't hold your breath. Till then, take care of yourselves, my fellow travelers, and beware the wasteland.